Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. The Women's Project Theater launched in 1978. The organization has produced more than 600 main stage productions and developmental projects and published 11 anthologies of plays. The theater dedicates itself to the work of women. Lisa McNulty serves as producing artistic director in her second season. This morning, she spoke at the Morning Fill-Up at the Garage in Rapid City. She joins us now from the SDPB studios there. Lisa, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you were hired by the founder of this organization, Julia Miles, is that correct?
This is the third time I've worked at WP. Julia Miles, the founder, hired me in 1997. Uh-huh. She actually gave me my first paying job in the American Theater, and I was there for 3 or 4 years. And then I came back in the early 2000s as the associate artistic director, and then I went away and was producing at Manhattan Theater Club, which is a large Broadway and off-Broadway theater in New York. And then about 2.5 years ago, I got the call to come back and lead the organization, which I was really excited to get because it's an institution that's been part of my career, part of my career and my thinking as a person of the theater for the bulk of my professional life.
What do you know about its origins in 1978 and how revolutionary the idea of focusing on women theater artists was back then?
Well, in 1978, Julia Miles, the founder, was working at another theater, the American Place Theater. And, you know, of course, at that time, it was the real foundation of the second wave feminist movement. And Julia was she was very involved in the feminist movement and was looking around and realizing that she was producing work, but realizing that only about 6% of the work being done was by women. And because Julia is a person who, she's a person who makes things happen, she was like, okay, great. Well, what am I going to do about that? And what she did was she created, at first under the auspices of American Place Theater and then on her own, started Women's Project. And we are now the oldest and largest theater devoted in the country, devoted to new work by women. And as far as I've been able to tell, I believe the oldest and largest that I've been able to find. There's a theater about a year older than we are in London, but it's much, much smaller. Yeah. So, you know, that is revolutionary to be the oldest and largest and to have fostered so many artists. Back in the 70s, Julia was a real home for a lot of the female artists that we look to in the American theater now and we think of as fundamental artists. That has been the legacy of this place is the artists who are making the work that, you know, wins Pulitzers and Tony Awards. And, you know, those artists have began their careers with us. And so that feels like the biggest legacy for the institution.
Tell me some of those success stories, some of those names that theatergoers might recognize that were sort of launched through WP.
Well, Anna DeVere Smith did one of her first projects with us, a piece called I Am Integrated. There's a play called A My Name Is Alice that had went on to have a huge life in the theater that began with us. Eve Ensler worked with us at the very beginning of her career. There are artists who are contemporary now. An artist, Sarah Treem, who is a playwright, who was my intern, actually, mm-hmm. when I worked at the Women's Project in the early 2000s, is now the showrunner for The Affair and won a Golden Globe for that show last season. So, you know, there are folks who have had careers not only in theater but in film and television, and that's been really exciting to be the theatrical home for those artists who go on to make a really major impact in work that we all see in our TVs and in theaters.
Is there a patriarchal structure to American theater today?
There's a patriarchal structure in this country, I suppose, but it's tricky. folks don't like to take risks, right? They like to invest in known quantities. And for most of theater's history, the artists that have been invested in are male artists, right? And so when folks are programming work, they want to be programming work that feels familiar to them, that people will buy a ticket to. And largely, because those are the artists who have traditionally been supported, that work is male work. You know, those are, the David Mamets and the Neil Simons and the Donald Margulieses of the world. Those are the people, those are the names that folks know. And so those are the artists that people go to again and again. So what we do is about launching artists that become the the David Mamets and the Donald Margulieses and the David Lindsay Bears of tomorrow. They just happen to be female. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, if there's anything that I suppose that's the fundamental nature of what we do, is like paving a way for those artists to become the known quantities, and making work that people feel excited about and excited about enough because they've read about it or heard about it at our theater to go on and program it all around the country, which has happened and has been exciting for us.
How do you encourage the risk taking in young artists who are unknown? How do you encourage them to take the kind of creative risks in their work that could bring innovation or something that we've never seen before, but also, could be turned away because it's something we've never seen before?
Well, we have a program called the Lab, which is we've been running since the 80s, actually, for directors. It began with directors, and we've added playwrights and then producers. And I think the way that we provide we encourage risk is by providing in the lab a safe space for people. The lab is five playwrights, five producers, and five directors who spend 2 years with us in residence doing career development. And we hook them up with executive coaches, and we develop their work towards a festival at the end of the 2 years. And during that time, we're really providing a safe space for them to bring work in that is very much in development, that is very much in a nascent stage, and providing a space for them to try it out with collaborators they trust, and then ready it for this festival. So I think really providing a space that feels safe for them to try things on for size in front of collaborators who support them and whose advice they trust is a good first step. And then our festival is a place for them to, once they've had some time to percolate the work, to actually show it to an audience and to present them as artists into the field, which is exciting to me, to be the way station for those artists and the launching pad.
Hmm. Is that how you sort of push the work then forward to those industry leaders who will pick up on it through that program, or do you have other ways you do that as well?
Absolutely. I mean, we have the festival is just one avenue that we have for artists. I think for us, it's a great way to launch or to graduate 15 new artists into the field. And we work really hard to get artistic leaders from all over the country, as well as New York, to come in and see the work and get to know the work of these artists. But also we have a full season, a full off-Broadway season of work that we present every year, we definitely focus on bringing lab alums into the season as well, so that we're really we're developing those artists, but then also producing their work in our season. I feel like my goal for the institution is to provide as many opportunities for artists as possible. So, we have a season of work, we have the lab, we just started a conversation that I'm hoping to be ongoing, which is a safe space for female designers to come in and talk about, reflect to each other their own challenges about being women designers in the industry. And that's a conversation that's not gotten a lot of attention, and really wanting to create a space for that, as well as partnering with other institutions that are supporting women. I feel like providing us being a central way station for those other kinds of institutions is really important as well.
I'm wondering what kind of challenges you hear from those young theater designers, those women. What are they saying that some of those challenges are?
It's harder for them to progress as quickly as their male counterparts.
How
I
come?
Think they don't. Lots of reasons. I think designers have very special challenges, because I think they are working with shops and crews, which are very traditionally male-dominated spaces, and so they have a hard time getting as fair a shake as their male counterparts. But also, I think there isn't as sophisticated, I can't think of a better way to say it, old boys network of sort of apprenticeship that then leads to advancement in design for designers. And I think that there is more of a traditional kind of apprenticeship model for designers, as opposed to writers, directors, other disciplines. I think there really is you do your time as an assistant or as an apprentice, and then you move on. And I think women get stuck in the apprenticeship or assistant or associate role and don't move forward as quickly into full design positions. And that's not because they're not as qualified. There are certainly the women who do make it to Off-Broadway and Broadway, their work is recognized. Once they get there, it's just harder for them to make their way there. So it's been interesting to have that conversation with this, you know, our first group. I think we had about 50 women who showed up, and were talking, and there were women who were regularly working on Broadway, and then there were women who were just out of graduate school, and to have all of them in conversation and having the same challenges was really interesting to hear.
Tell me a little bit about playwrights, because you would think a play that was written by a woman, you might not be able to identify that it had a female playwright. Is it that the women themselves have a hard time being taken seriously as playwrights because they're female, or are they producing work that is different than what people have seen because it comes from a fresh perspective, and that's causing a firewall to be up? That they're talking about scenarios that maybe we haven't talked about before.
It's interesting because when work is read blind, you know, there's no name on it. There's no difference in terms of male work versus female work. People's responses, the work is judged. Work is judged equitably, but once there's a name on it, and there's even been experiments where they've cross-gendered plays, and sent them to readers, and the play is judged more harshly when it's given a woman's name is put on the play. There's a perception that women's work is more domestic. It's not entertaining. It's not funny. That men won't enjoy a play if it's written by a woman, because clearly it's about women. Where there's not that perception when a man has written a play that a woman wouldn't enjoy it. I think for me, as I program, it's very interesting to me. In my first season, I was really excited to be able to program a play by Laura Eason, who's a wonderful playwright at mid-career, who actually she's a writer and producer on House of Cards, but a long-term WP member and supporter. She wrote a play with a 50-year-old male protagonist. And I thought, it was a good play. That's the only important thing. But secondly, I thought, oh, that's cool. People are right. There's no way that you can decide this is a chick play when the lead character is a 50-year-old guy, with a struggling Chicago Rock and Roll Club. That sort of strips away the notion of that's not what women write about, because clearly women write about all kinds of things.
Good writing is good writing.
And for me, it's exciting for me to be able to upend people's perceptions of what it means to be a women's theater and what kind of plays women write. That's really exciting for me as a person programming plays, to be able to tell that kind of story with our work.
Lisa, we just have about a minute left, and I'm wondering how you find those young high school students and college students who are in the theater, want to become theater artists. You go out, search for them. What kind of advice do you have for them getting started today?
The best advice I can have is don't wait for somebody to give you an opportunity. You always have to be making work. I think you need to make the work that you want to see in the world, and you should not wait for someone's permission. The more work you make, the better you're going to get it at your work, and it behooves no one to ignore good work that's being made. So, get together with your friends, get together with your colleagues, and, read the plays you want to read, talk about the plays you want to talk about, gather together every Friday and read the pages you've written that week. And I promise you, somebody's going to be paying attention, because you're a person that makes things happen. I find that folks, who are in school get socialized to wait for permission. And the folks that don't wait for permission are the folks that progress, particularly women, because I think women are socialized to wait for things or to ask for permission or to ask for, to ask for what they need rather than to make space for themselves. And I would ask for women to make the space they want in the world, and they will find it.
Lisa McNulty is the mother of a teenage daughter that makes me want to hug you. So thank you very much. You've been listening to Lisa McNulty. She's artistic director of the Women's Project Theater in New York. She spoke at the Morning Philip at the Garage in Rapid City. Morning Philip is sponsored by the Bush Foundation and the NUMAD Group. Lisa, thank you so much for your time. We really, really appreciate that.
No, I'm excited to be here. South Dakota is an incredible place. It's been so cool to be here.